In order for me to tell you about this, you're going to need to know about Clint Rockwell first. Now, I've known him for around 8 years. So he was always... strange, to say the least. But not in the sense that it made him an outcast. It was the opposite, actually. I guess strange wasn't the right word. Let's call him, exceptional. If I were to give you a quick rundown of his life, it goes something like this. Straight A's from primary to post-secondary. Full rides to Ivy Leagues. Intern offers out the ass after just his undergraduate year. Astonishingly charismatic and handsome. It was to the point where nobody even seemed to be bitter towards him. No jealousy either, they just admired him. But despite all the parties he was invited to, all the attempts at friendship, all the girls that threw themselves at him, he chose to be a loner. In fact, I was one of the only people he talked to. Didn't tell you why he chose me as an acquaintance, he just did. And let me tell you, I was about as average gets. But for a life of mundanity. It all started in 7th grade. I had just failed a geometry test. To be fair, I didn't really study for it, but, you know, whatever. Clint was sitting right by me. I saw him take one disaffected glance at his paper before putting it down. He got 100, of course. I guess he saw me staring because he looked down at my paper and chuckled. It was slightly embarrassing, of course, but instead of hurling an insult, he asked if I wanted to come over after school and study, maybe play some video games. I agreed. And that's when I started to get a glimpse into his ideals. See, he was never satisfied with anything. I remember our conversation regarding what he wanted to do in the future. I had all the generic answers. Buy a Lamborghini. A big house in Hollywood. Marry Megan Fox. Yeah. I was that asshole, but Clint. Clint, he wanted something different. He had bigger aspirations. Adventure, he told me. Going somewhere uncharted. Discovering something new, you know? Something that nobody's seen. And at that time, I didn't know what he meant. What, like Jupiter or some shit? I asked him. He chuckled. Maybe, something like that. At the time, I couldn't fathom why he wanted to go into space. Nothing's up there, I told him. What's the point? He just gave me this amused look. It wasn't one of contentious superiority. No, he wasn't like that. See, he knew that I couldn't have understood. But he didn't fault me for it. Well, think about this. People's lives have become lackluster, he went on. When we have all the comforts in the world, everything turns into structure, routine, nothing new. Our destiny decided by the time we're out of college. Who the hell wants to get caught up in the rat race and just chase monotony day to day? That's the worst possible outcome. That's why we watch movies and read books, escapism. Looking for stories that are infinitely more satisfying than the one we're living in. I mean, what do we really have to look forward to? He talked a lot like this. It didn't sound suicidal. It was something else. This guy, beyond, was driven. I could see it. But to be honest, I couldn't tell you what he did in the long hours he spent in his room alone. He never talked about it. By the time he went off to Caltech, I went to Penn State. We started drifting apart. In fact, after the first year of his master's degree, he stopped talking to me completely. Stopped talking to anybody, actually. And when he didn't go home after spring break, his folks called the cops. Apparently, he stopped going to class. We looked for him. There were no traces. It was a cold case going nowhere. However, I do remember the last time we had communicated. He'd sent me a Facebook message. This is all it said. You want to be part of something? It's a project I'm working on. I can explain more later. I sent him a message asking about specifics, but he never responded. That was the last I'd heard of him, about 7 years. That was before he knocked on my door in the middle of the night, some hours ago. I wasn't going to open up at first. These stories never really end well. However, that's when I heard my name being called by a distant, familiar voice. couldn't believe my ears. I stared through the peephole at what looked like a homeless man. He had dirty, tattered clothes, massive beard, and generally unkempt appearance, but I recognized those eyes instantly. I recognized that spark. It was Clint. I opened up. I greeted him in disbelief, but before I could pelt him with questions, he stopped me. "Look, don't freak out. I'll explain everything. Maybe let me shower first, though." He flashed his award-winning smile at me, though his pearly whites weren't what they used to be. "It's really good to see you, by the way." That's when I got a closer look at his frame. He was bigger than I remembered, bulkier. Looked like he'd put on 10 pounds of muscle. His model-like face was now weathered, beaten, covered in scars. He also smelled of sweat and grime. Now, this was absolutely insane, to say the least. After he washed up and settled onto the couch, he laid it all out. And I'm going to tell you what he said, verbatim. Apparently, during the latter half of his undergraduate year, he was approached by his physics professor, Joel Rust, a somewhat eccentric 42-year-old, but he was supposedly brilliant. Rust had chosen Clint specifically to partake in what he called a research project. He laughed when he told me this. "We had to call it that," he said. "If they knew what we were really doing, the funding would be gone." There were 14 other people involved in this. 2 theoretical physicists, 3 cosmologists, 2 young thrill seekers, 2 ex-Navy SEALs, and a discharged U.S. soldier, an archaeologist, retired MMA fighter, a disgraced entrepreneur, and a suicidal drifter Rust found trying to jump off a bridge. Yeah, that was a strange group, for sure. "But we all shared similar ideals," he explained. "For one reason or another, we were looking to get away from this world. Looking for another frontier." Apparently, while on vacation, Rust had discovered something peculiar off a remote coast in the South Island in New Zealand. Something over the Cook Strait. Rust explained that he'd been seeing some kind of strange, thick fog that hung under the clouds. "Now, we don't know what he meant by that," Clint stated. "He never really explained it. For years, he spent his summers over there and observed it himself. He'd then spent every second of his free time analyzing his observations. Eventually, he'd enlisted the help of some cosmologists and other physicists." Clint looked at me. It seemed as if he was having trouble holding in a huge grin. "You know what the theory they came to was?" I shook my head. "It was a passage to somewhere else. A different universe, so to speak." This floored me. I was skeptical for about a second, but then I thought about who I was talking to, and how strange this whole situation was. I kept listening. I asked him how they figured that out. "You want the details," he replied. I thought about... no, not really. Science was never really my strong point. Anyhow, he told me how Rust had started conducting experiments. He'd fly a drone into the fog whenever a storm was brewing. Those were the only times where it was visible. He'd estimated that after it disappeared, there would be about a 3-minute window where he could control it. After that, it was gone forever. "That's why we need the funding," Clint explained. Shit, what's expensive? The culmination of all these experiments and all this research was supposed to be a trip into the fog, just to see what they would find. That's when Rust started forming the team. It took a while, but he eventually gathered together people he deemed would be fit for something like this, along with the other researchers involved. He said that he chose me because of an essay I wrote for class. The topic was about what the universe meant to us as individuals, Clint said. I guess it spoke to him. I'm sure he had other reasons as well, he smirked to himself. Now, while the ex-military and thrill-seekers were all in good shape, Rust and the researchers weren't. Nobody knew what to expect, really. That's why we had to train. Cardio, strength, agility, the works. Nobody wanted to lag behind, Clint elaborated. After 3 years, they deemed themselves ready to go. The big day was finally there. On a warm spring day in California, and a particularly choppy one in the South Islands, Rust, Clint, and the rest of the team piled into a private plane owned by an entrepreneur. They brought with them months' worth of rations, weapons, First aid kits and research equipment. Parachutes as well, just in case. Everything you could think of. Funnily enough, the Drifter was the only person who knew how to pilot. I remember thinking that this was batshit. Wait, I asked him. So you guys were just going through with this? Was nobody scared of what could happen? He chuckled. So, you have a bunch of insane researchers, soldiers, scarred by combat, thrill seekers, a suicidal guy, don't even get me started on myself, and you think we gave a shit? No. I guess we weren't. As it turns out, they figured out what Rust was thinking about when they got close to the thing. Apparently the fog was dark gray, almost black. Maybe 100 meters below the clouds, and it was massive. The strangest part was that it didn't move at all, as you could clearly tell where it began and where it ended. Eventually, everybody braced themselves upon entering. They were suddenly submerged into darkness. Clint said that he could see the silhouette of anticipation on everyone's face from the faint cabin light, and after 3 minutes, the plane started malfunctioning. Here's the fucked up part. Rust never told anybody about the drone experiments until afterward. When this happened, everybody started freaking out. Nobody was expecting it, but soon after, a wave of light filled the plane. What they saw out the window was, well, incomprehensible. A dark, foreboding landscape. Heavy rain pounded the windows while a cacophony of violent lightning bolts struck around them. To make matters worse, the plane was headed down into a dark ocean beneath. As they got closer, they could tell that there was definitely movement in the water, large movements, and they weren't just waves. Luckily for them, the plane was also on a trajectory for a landmass just up ahead. Nobody asked any questions. They just stuffed their bags with weapons, rations, and water, and were hastily strapping on their parachutes. Now, it was at this point that they realized military training would have come in handy. Right then, it was every man for themselves. Once the plane was nearly over the island, everyone started jumping out. A good portion of them didn't get so lucky. Other than Rust, only one of the researchers survived. Two of them couldn't open their chutes in time. One landed in the water, where he was quickly consumed by something. And one got struck by lightning on the way down. And the entrepreneur and one of the ex-SEALs also didn't make it, both landing rough on the rocky shoreline. The team was suddenly down to 10. They watched as the plane spiraled out of control into the murky sea. The fog was also still visible in the distance. Just hanging there. After they regrouped, they just sat in silence for a while. Nobody knew what to think. Rust's theory looked to be right, it seemed. The island itself was pretty similar to tropical ones that you would find here on Earth. Except for the trees as tall as apartment complexes, and the fact that the sky was always cloudy. They'd later find out that this place had a name. Dusk Blue. Another peculiar thing was that the lightning never seemed to strike land. Only the ocean. And that's good news for them. They started making their way into the jungle in front of them. With nowhere else to go, this is all they could do. Amongst them, they managed to take 6 pistols, 4 machetes, an assault rifle, and a shotgun. No reserve ammunition, though. They'd always concluded that they have about 5 days of food and water for all of them. As they made their way across the land, some creepy, unexplainable shit started happening. The MMA fighter, they called him Duke, went to go piss in some bushes at one point. About 30 seconds later, he ran back to the group, freaked out and hyperventilating. Everybody tried to ask him what was happening. And that's when they looked at the clearing that he had come from. Duke was standing right there, with a blank expression plastered on his face, but he was also with them. Then, out of nowhere, his copy began sprinting backwards into the woods at a torrid pace. Another occurrence took place when they came across what looked to be a void just floating in the air in front of them. It was literally a door-sized black shape that was devoid of anything. One of the thrill-seekers, Jeff, stuck his hand into it for a second before pulling it back. He could still move it, but it became completely numb. It stayed that way. Apparently one night they woke up to the sound of shells blasting in the air. Lauren, the archaeologist, was shooting at something just a few meters away from where they were sleeping. Clint said it was hard to describe. Something along the lines of a massive spider-human hybrid. The shotgun didn't affect it. It just crawled away. God, this sounds like a fucking nightmare. Is this what you wanted? I asked him. And I was sincerely curious. Yeah. This is exactly what I wanted. His words sounded genuine. I guess it didn't matter that I couldn't understand him. He understood himself. And he went on. 3 days passed, and they're still in the jungle. They didn't know where they were heading, but nobody wanted to admit that. Rust and the cosmologist continually recorded their observations while everyone else was getting antsy. They were running out of food. The other thrill seeker, Clint forgot his name, was starting to get delirious. They'd seen a small creature that vaguely resembled a chicken, and he tried attacking it with a machete. Unfortunately, his throat was instantly slit upon making contact with it. Nobody went near any wildlife after that. It looked like hunting for food was now out of the question. An urgency was setting in. At night, they started hearing horrific, unrecognizable sounds all around them. One time, they woke up to see a pale, humanoid creature with no facial features sitting cross-legged just a few meters away. And suddenly, the skin on its head peeled back to reveal a singular, monstrous-sized eye. It only needed to blink one more time before everybody got the hell out of there. They'd also come across a strange hole in the ground at one point. It was about the size of a basketball. The other ex-SEAL, name also forgotten, walked up to take a look. Cautiously, he peered into it. About a minute passed, and he still hadn't moved. People started shouting at him just to leave it, but he ignored everything. They tried pulling him away, but he didn't budge. He just stayed crouched, eyes blankly transfixed on the hole. After about 10 minutes, they left him. Things were reaching a tipping point on the fifth day. They were starving, sleep-deprived, paranoid. With only 4 MREs left for the 8 of them, they needed to conserve energy. However, every time they stopped to rest, they'd hear footsteps behind them. They'd look for the source, but there was nothing visible to be found. The steps would just get louder and louder, and eventually, they caught up. Clint said that they could hear something quickly running circles around them before he started to feel lightheaded. The last thing he remembered hearing before passing out was a barrage of shouts coming from somewhere in front of them, one of them voices that he recognized. And he awoke sometime later, lying on a stiff mattress in a small wood cabin. His head was pounding, his face was covered in dried blood when he touched it. He looked around the room, nearly jumping out of his skin, when he saw somebody sharpening some kind of weapon in the corner. He did look to be human, resembling a Mediterranean man, and upon seeing Clint wake, he got up and introduced himself as Slade. He also spoke English, albeit it was a strange accent that Clint said he never heard before. Now, Clint is no small guy. He's probably around 6'1". But Slade still towered over him. He'd explained that he was essentially a guard protecting a walled civilization called Pharaoh Locus, where Clint currently was. He described how he and the rest of the team had come into contact with what the locals referred to as stalkers. They'd eventually managed to fend them off, bring Clint and the rest to safety. They were happy to let them stay as long as they did a fair share of work. He further explained the island that they were on. As it turns out, Dusk Blue was actually one of the few places in that world that had a semblance of order and society. While most of it was still extremely hostile, there were protected settlements set up all around, where people could live in relative peace. However, the main attraction was at the center, a massive self-governing city-state known as Paradise X, where settlements like Pharaoh Locus could be compared to small towns in the Old West. Paradise X was more comparable to a modern-day metropolis. He went on to explain a strange trend in births on the island, in which around 1 to 1,000 children were born with enhanced levels of strength, speed, and nearly impenetrable skin. Officials from Paradise X would come around to settlements every now and then in order to recruit these children into the security force set to protect these borders. In exchange, their families would be allowed citizenship and a place to live within the city. Of course, everybody was after this. This resulted in a lot of questionable moral decisions. when it came to children. Clint then asked about all the stuff that had happened before they were rescued, all the weird shit, and apparently Slade just sighed and told him not to worry about it. He didn't have the answers either. That stuff's always been there, and it was better not to think about it. He told them to simply stay inside the settlement and not cause any trouble. The punishment for disorderly conduct was exile. I was still trying to wrap my head around any of this when Clint started yawning. He told me that he was tired, that we could talk about it in the morning, and I tried to get him to stay up and tell me. But his eyes were already halfway closed.
I've been gone through some messed up shit, man. Just let me rest for a bit. Don't worry. I got more to tell you. Spent 7 years over there, for Christ's sake.
He said, obviously drowsy. Yeah, fine. Look, you could take the guest room, I told him. And after feeding him some leftover spaghetti, I led him up there. I had to ask him one more time before he passed out, though. What about your folks? How the hell are you going to explain this to them? He paused for a second before speaking.
Couldn't if I tried. They're gone, man.
To be honest, the lack of emotion in his voice disturbed me a bit. No shit, I'm sorry, was all I could utter out. He just let out a forced chuckle and said,
What are you sorry for? You didn't do anything.
Before disappearing into the bedroom. That's when I really thought about what just happened. If Clint's been telling me the truth, well then that's horrifying to think about. And I guess I'll have another update when he wakes up. To be continued.